For the next 6 months, Ireland will be at the centre of European decision-making, from defence, farming, to big tech, trade, Ukraine. The choices made in Brussels could shape our future here in Ireland for years to come. So, what exactly does the EU presidency mean, and why should you care? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And today, Ireland starts holding the presidency of the Council of the EU until December. At a very basic level, it means that Irish ministers will chair meetings, help set the agenda and try to broker agreement between the 27 member states on some of the biggest issues facing Europe. There's official priorities, there are competitiveness, values, security, but the timing might prove the biggest issue because Europe is dealing with war in Ukraine, instability in the Middle East, pressure on defence spending, migration, enlargement, trade tensions and questions over how it actually keeps pace economically with the US and China, all issues that we've covered at length here on News Talk Daily over the past year. But one of Ireland's more sensitive roles will be around Iran, because there's no EU delegation in Tehran. The country holding the EU presidency represents the union locally. That means Irish diplomats will take on that role for the next 6 months, initially from the German embassy in Tehran, while Ireland's own embassy premises are being completed. It comes after months of conflict involving the US, Israel and Iran, with the shockwaves felt globally, not least in the EU. So this puts Ireland into the middle of European diplomacy at a really tense moment, with questions over safety, influence, neutrality, and how much a smaller member state can actually shape the EU's response. Well, today on the podcast, we're joined by Suzanne Lynch, Brussels Bureau Chief with Bloomberg News. Suzanne, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Good to be with you.
Now, let's be honest, right? I'm going to admit it. Ireland's EU presidency doesn't exactly scream blockbuster podcast edition, but, right? You got to scratch beneath the surface. You've got to stay with us, folks, because if you do that, you'll find trade wars, billion euro budgets, Donald Trump, AI, farming, defence and massive political decisions that are facing the EU today.
Yes, look, I mean, this is something that happens every 6 months in the EU calendar. Another country gets its moment to host these meetings over the 6 months, to be in the chair for important gatherings of ministers, and it rotates around the EU. Now, because Ireland has been in the EU for so long at this stage, well over 50 years, this is actually the eighth time it will be doing this. The last time was back in 2013. And back then, it was a very different place. Ireland was still in the bailout. It was still in the midst of that economic crisis. And now different issues are facing the EU, not least defence and security with the war in Ukraine. You've got the trade issues confronting Europe with the trade war, essentially, that Donald Trump unleashed on Europe. And you've got like the threat from China in terms of its economic dominance and Europe's dependency on China and the US for a lot when it comes to trade and everything from critical minerals to tech when it comes to America. So the European Union is going through something of an inflection point in that it's wondering about its place in the world, about whether it's still a big geopolitical player. And they're the kind of big themes that will be shaping the next 6 months in EU policymaking.
Okay, so the stakes are pretty high. I want to look back actually at that last presidency that we held in 2013. It cost 50 million. It actually came in under budget, about 9 million. It was called the Tapwater presidency because, let's face it, we hadn't a penny to our name. This time, it could cost up to 400 million euro. That is a remarkable increase. Is that, Suzanne, inflation, all the additional security costs, or does it tell us how much bigger and more powerful the EU has become over the past 13 years?
I think one of the main reasons is that this year in this presidency, there would be a big meeting of not just the EU leaders, but it's called the European Political Community, which means out to 47 leaders from around Europe. So not just EU countries, but countries like Britain, Turkey, Ukraine. That's happening in November. in Dublin, and that's going to be the big set piece of the EU presidency, and there's going to be a lot of security costs involved with that. We do expect that the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, will attend. Perhaps the leaders of countries like Azerbaijan, Armenia, they will all be on the invite list. So it's going to be a huge logistical challenge and a huge security challenge, particularly for a country like Ireland, which obviously isn't a big spender when it comes to defence and security. And in recent EU meetings, like we saw this in Copenhagen during the Danish presidency, when there were drones near the airport and, you know, there were delays and scrambling flights, etc. These kind of threats of what some people call hybrid threats are now in the air, literally and metaphorically, in a way they weren't, you know, in 2013. There wasn't the Ukraine situation. There wasn't war in the European continent. So I think that's one of the reasons for that increase. And it's one of the reasons why the themes as well will be so much more different this time around.
How is Ireland viewed now, would you say, in the EU?
Look, I think Ireland is seen as a very committed EU member. It's very experienced, as I said. Like, you forget that, you know, we have been in the bloc a long time. We joined before Spain, for example. And then you had that big wave of enlargement back in 2004, more than 20 years ago now, when actually Ireland was holding the presidency at that year, when you had a big block of 10 Central and Eastern European countries join the EU. So Ireland is a bit of an old hand at this in one sense. But look, there are some vulnerabilities and sensitivities. Number one would be defence spending, because Ireland is obviously not a member of NATO. It's one of four EU countries that are not NATO members. But other countries that had not been NATO members, namely Finland and Sweden, have joined NATO. So the fact that Ireland is military neutral, you know, it's allowed be that obviously it's Ireland's choice. But at the end of the day, it's actually unusual for an EU country not to be spending that much on defence. Other countries do. So I think there, for some countries, not all, you know, they might think, well, why isn't Ireland contributing more to the defence of Europe? That's an issue. Now, I think what we'll see during the presidency is that Ireland is going to talk about security, but in a much broader way, and things like economic security. When it comes to Ukraine, I think this is going to be very interesting. Ireland is very pro-EU enlargement. It thinks it's good that new members should join the European Union, and it's going to be trying to get progress on Ukraine and Moldova's entry into the EU. Again, that's actually quite a difficult task, because quietly here, there are some countries who are not 100% sure about allowing Ukraine to join the European Union. Even though Viktor Orban, for example, is no longer in power in Hungary, his successor, Peter Mayer, you know, he's unblocked the first bit of this stage, but he's also talked about, you know, Hungary wanting to have a say on whether Ukraine joins. So it's not a done deal there either. So that's going to be, I think, a challenging conversation for the Irish officials over the next 6 months.
I mean, we do like to see ourselves as punching above our weight in Europe. Is that how our European partners see us? Or is that just how we see ourselves?
Well, I think every country in a way feels that, you know, they see their leaders coming here to Brussels, 27 of them. They're all, you know, they're all leading governments in each country. They all have their own sensitivities, their own domestic issues that come up here when they arrive to EU meetings, and Ireland is no different. I do think, though, that the experience that Ireland's had in running some of these presidencies will stand to it. And what you'll see is a lot of this stuff happens behind the scenes. So, for example, if there's a meeting of EU agriculture ministers, the Irish agriculture minister, Aidan, will chair that meeting. But also all the officials from the Irish Department of Agriculture will be centrally involved in Dublin and here in Brussels in planning those meetings and in doing the follow-up meetings by from officials that happen. So, you know, your competency of your civil service, essentially, is kind of what keeps the show on the road here. And I think because Ireland has been in the EU for so long, it's pretty experienced at this kind of stuff. But like the other issue, I mean, we're saying about defence, I do think the tech issue is also maybe something that's come into focus. Mm. I mean, you're talking that, you know, how is Ireland perceived? I think it's fair to say that Ireland's low corporate tax regime is not something that other countries appreciate very much. You know, every country has the right to set its corporate tax rate. There's been a lot of pressure on Ireland, you know, on this issue over the years. Now, not so much at the moment, but I think the fact that so many of the US tech companies have their European headquarters in Ireland, and the fact that there is a backlash against, you know, this question about regulation of social media, that's a kind of uncomfortable conversation for Ireland. And I can tell you, Kira, like, there's going to be a pile of journalists coming here from Brussels, all looking for stories to write from all over Europe. And there's going to be officials from Brussels going to different meetings. So they will be learning things about Ireland that they mightn't have known, for good or for bad. But I do think the tech company story is something that the government will be mindful of.
So there was loads of credit shown to Ireland for the recovery and how we took the bailouts and the pain, I suppose, back in 2013. And maybe we were still living off that. And we saw this unwavering support by the EU during the Brexit negotiations, which a lot of people thought were payback for that. But you're saying now that has been tempered a bit. There's a bit more of a critical view of the country because of our reliance on US tech corporations, because of our corporate tax rate, and because they're not necessarily that impressed by the way that we have dealt with our own security.
Yeah, I think the security one in particular actually is a sensitive one, because there'd be some countries in Europe, and I've heard people saying this, ministers from other countries, that, you know, don't understand, you know, why Ireland isn't paying more on defence. They just don't kind of, I get the question all the time, why does Ireland not want to join NATO? I never really have an answer. I say, you know, I explain to people, you know, the public isn't behind that. It doesn't feel it needs to, at the, you know, and it's not going to happen. I think we're all clear on that. But for other countries who are member of NATO and who are increasing their defence spending, they find that hard to understand. Now, Ireland, if a government official was on here, they'd be making the point that Ireland has been increasing its spending on defence, that it is preparing for this EU role. But a lot of people see the EU as, when you're in the EU, you get a lot of rights. You get free movement. You get free movement of goods, of people, of capital. You get, we got, you know, so many millions from the European Union when we were net recipients of the EU budget. But you also have to give. And, you know, now people can give in different ways. And obviously Ireland has done so much in terms of welcoming Ukrainian refugees, for example, all of that. But, you know, there is that perception that everyone has to pull together on certain issues, and that there was that support given to Ireland at various points. Now, I do think, though, look, as I said earlier, every country knows they've all got their own sensitivity. So, you know, if you're in France, for example, the French farmers are very sensitive issue, you know, politically. You're a German leader, the German car makers, that's what they're worried about at the moment. The European car industry is in a really bad place, losing ground to China. And what happens in Germany really does impact the rest of Europe. It's the biggest country in Europe, it's the biggest economy in the EU. And say for the car industry, for example, you've got a whole supply chain there, Central and East European countries like Slovakia, who feed into the German manufacturing. So if Germany sneezes, like, a lot of people get a cold. So everyone has their own issues. And I think people understand that in Brussels. But, you know, I think what Ireland will have to show, that it's been honest, that it's been neutral in terms of all the negotiations that are happening, that it can fairly debate these things, even if it's not contributing that much in defence itself.
Okay, let's look at what's going to happen over the next 6 months. Because one thing we do know about the EU is that it is, I'm trying to find a diplomatic word for this, slow?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we have 6 months. It's actually a really short period of time. And there's a huge, an exceptionally heavy legislative workload here. So what's a priority going to be? Like, what's realistic, Suzanne?
So one of the main priorities is going to be, and this, when you're talking about slow and very hard, what we said at the beginning, hard to connect with people, this is a classic example. It's called a lovely EU acronym, the MFF, the Multi-Annual Financial Framework.
Okay, and stay with us, listeners. Stay with us, listeners. This is important stuff.
So basically, it's the EU's seven-year budget. It doesn't kick in until 2028, but over so the decisions are made now will govern what's in that EU budget for 7 years. So it's a colossal piece of EU decision-making. And during the six-month presidency, Ireland has said it wants to progress that very far. They're looking at, by the end of the year, have some kind of agreement on the top numbers at a summit in Brussels in December. But that's like kind of a classic example of the challenges in trying to get decisions through the EU. The European Commission is proposing a budget of 2 trillion. It's a huge amount of money, but it's funded by the richer countries. It's funded by the net contributors, including Ireland, the percentages. And, you know, the bigger the country are, it's percentage-wise, but countries like Germany, the Netherlands, are contributing to this. So they are not happy. They think that figure is too high, number one. And you've got other countries in the south, like Spain and Italy, saying, no, it's high, and it should be, and we would have even more. And then you have a debate about what it should be spent on. So the big battle in the MFF is going to be about agriculture, the common agricultural policy. That has been controversial for decades. There are certain countries, certain people who believe that too much EU money goes on farm subsidies and that the world has changed and EU money needs to go somewhere else. For example, security. So, but countries like France will hold on to that dearly, as will Ireland, obviously. But you have other countries who don't see agriculture as being as important. So they're the kind of battles that will take place over the MFF. And even though it's going to go into next year, probably the discussion, Ireland's going to have to try and make progress on that tangibly.
And that's incremental,
but it is going to take up a lot of their time.
And that's interesting, because that's where the whole idea of being a neutral player in all of this seems actually really unrealistic, because clearly we're going to know what Ireland's attitudes towards that's going to be.
Yeah, but they won't be able to do that in the meetings. You know, they will have to just say, like, look at the difference, get people into a room, say, are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? That kind of thing. So this is the challenge. It's the same way as for example, Cyprus had the presidency the last time around, and Ireland has taken over from Cyprus. They had their own issues going on because they were getting drone attacks came in from from the Lebanon direction, and they ended up having to deal with that in the middle of their presidency. So I think everyone knows that you just have to put those issues aside. I think Ireland would be very conscious that it's seen to be neutral and that it can't really, during those 6 months, advocate too much for itself, and then it has to try and do something for the benefit of the EU.
So you have to sort of not necessarily shape the outcome. We basically are responsible for keeping the negotiations moving. But when you've all of these countries, like 27 countries, all with different priorities, who usually wins these negotiations? I mean, is it the bigger countries like France and Germany, or do smaller countries such as Ireland, if we weren't holding the presidency, actually influence the outcome?
Within the EU, there is a certain voting system that protects smaller countries. It's called qualified majority voting. And basically, the way it's structured is that when the EU is set up, they knew, well, if we have a voting system based on X, the big countries will always outvote the little ones. So there is a kind of built-in system there, the QMV system, that prevents that happening. However, in reality, the bigger countries, I believe, do have a lot of sway. At the end of the day, Germany and France have always been the engine of Europe. And how they work together is very important. And they do have a lot of heft. And sometimes they're good as well at getting kind of coalitions behind them. So if Germany's arguing for X, it'll find other countries that agree with them on a certain issue. We'll row in behind them. So I do think it's, you know, and since Brexit, with Britain leaving the EU, it was obviously a big power. I think some of the power now has tilted more perhaps towards France, French President Emmanuel Macron, even though he's facing an election next year and he won't be running again. And, you know, there is that sense that perhaps Marine Le Pen's party might just make it this time. You know, he has been a dominant figure in Europe for the last, you know, 8-9 years, the way Angela Merkel was before him. There's no doubt about it. So it kind of depends who's in power in these countries, where the power lies. And so Pedro Sanchez in Spain has been a very vocal prime minister for Spain on the international stage. So Spain, obviously a very big country, has also got a lot of heft. But that's what the EU is about. It's about trying to get balance and trying to get agreement on something that everyone can live with, really.
And it'll be interesting if Marine Le Pen does win next year in France. She's absolutely going to be advocating for massive cuts to that EU budget. So that's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out. Now, Ireland has often taken a really different position from other EU partners on, let's say, an issue like Gaza. Can Ireland use the presidency to influence that debate, or will we again be required to put all of our national views to one side?
Yeah, I think on foreign policy, it's a slightly specific kind of way the EU runs itself. In one way, the EU has very little power when it comes to foreign policy. You know, like each country can decide a lot of what they can do. And it's the EU High Representative, Kaya Kallas, who actually chairs those meetings of the EU. And some of those meetings will be one in September, for example. But Ireland can continue to make sure that, for example, sanctions at the Israeli-Palestinian issue is being, you know, is on the agenda, is being raised. It's not alone in that. Spain, Belgium, there are a number of other countries who also agree with that. And I think on a more indirect way, when you're going to get all these international journalists coming to Ireland and different officials, I think they're going to hear that. They're going to see that this issue is very important for Ireland. So in the long term, it's probably to the government's benefit that, you know, this awareness of Ireland's position will be out there for, you know, next year as these discussions on how to deal with Israel continue. But look, it will be there over the next 6 months, no matter what happens in the Middle East.
Now, people will picture ministers posing for photographs in Dublin Castle as being, you know, this is the moment where decisions are made. But the real work, Suzanne, does happen behind the scenes, doesn't it? Negotiations that most of us never hear, clearly aren't part of, have no idea what's been said. How much in Brussels is about diplomacy? How much is it about relationships, knowing the right people, spending the last couple of years building trust behind closed doors?
Yes, it definitely is, Ciara. I mean, here I'm talking to you from Brussels at the moment. I'm looking out the office window of Bloomberg up to the European Commission. And the Irish government have, it's not really called an embassy, it's called a permanent representation, where it has well over 100 officials here usually from all the different government departments. So when people think about how the EU runs, and, like, you know, we heard this during the Brexit debate saying, you know, oh, the EU imposing its laws on Britain was an argument. In reality, the way the EU works is that officials from every single country are here permanently in Brussels, and they're having meetings about all these different laws that are going through the EU system. So that's happening anyway, and the Irish Perm Rep, as it's called colloquially, will up its presence. More officials are coming because they'll be busier during the presidency. But the relationships that the officials, some of them from the Department of Foreign Affairs, some of them maybe from the Department of Energy or Environment or whatever, they will have been building, you know, bridges, they'll be meeting people here for the last few years. They're well known. So they're actually the people, like a lot of things in life, that are getting a lot of the work done. The politicians fly in and they give the speech and they are negotiating in the meetings, but really the officials are preparing the ground.
Last question. What can go wrong, Suzanne?
Well, this is a serious question in that you never know what's going to come along. As I mentioned earlier on, the Cypriots ended up in a situation where there was a drone and they had to put all their meetings online or move them to Brussels in March. So, you know, they didn't expect that to happen, for example. So you never quite know. So you have to be prepared for the unexpected too. We don't know what's going to happen in Ukraine. We don't know what's going to happen in Iran. And we don't know what's going to happen when it comes to President Trump, be it on Greenland or on trade tariffs. So I think the ability to be agile and to be able to respond to those will also be key.
Suzanne Lynch, always a pleasure.
Great to be with you, Ciara. Thanks.
Thanks so much for your time. Well, that's it from News Talk Daily today. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow morning. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.